Hello, listeners. This is Carolyn Yeager, bringing you the 12th installment of my reading of the Wehrmacht War Crimes Bureau, 1939 to 1945, a book written by Alfred de Zayas from the surviving files of this bureau. The original publication of this book in German was in 1979. 10 years later, in 1989, the English translation that I am using was released. To put this into a time perspective, this edition came out right before the fall of the Berlin Wall, which took place beginning in November 1989 and ending in October 1990. In December 1991, the Soviet Union was formally dissolved. I will be reading chapter 21 and 22 in this installment. Chapter 21 is titled simply Katyn. That one word has become famous for the Soviet massacre of Polish officers that took place in Russia's Katyn Forest and for so long was allowed to be blamed on the Germans. Because the date of this writing is not the most recent, I'm going to give a brief background according to the latest statistics that are known today. The number of victims is estimated at about 22,000, with the executions and mass burial taking place in several locations, only partly in the Katyn Forest. About 250,000 to 454,700 Polish soldiers and policemen were captured and interned by the Soviet authorities. Some were freed or escaped quickly, but 125,000 were imprisoned in camps run by the NKVD. This is according to an article by Kuznyar Plota, which is widely used. Of these 125,000, 42,400 soldiers, mostly of Ukrainian and Belarusian ethnicity, serving in the Polish army, who lived in the former Polish territories, now annexed by the Soviet Union, were released in October. The 43,000 soldiers born in Western Poland, then under German control, were transferred to the Germans, and in turn the Soviets received 13,575 Polish prisoners from the Germans. This left a total of 53,175 Poles, or thereabouts, in Soviet captivity. The largest camps were located at Kozelsk in a monastery, in Ostashkov on an island in Seliger Lake, and in Starobelsk near Kharkiv. The approximate distribution of men throughout the camps was as follows. Kozelsk, 5,000. Ostashkov, 6,570, and Starobelsk, 4,000. They totaled 15,570 men. So that is the general number you'll find in various places. And not always exactly the same, but close to it. According to a report from 19th November 1939, the NKVD had about 40,000 Polish POWs, about 8,000 to 8,500 officers and warrant officers, 6,000 to 6,500 police officers, and 25,000 soldiers and non-commissioned officers. In December, a wave of arrests resulted in the imprisonment of additional Polish officers. Ivan Serov reported to Lavrenty Beria on 3rd December that, quote, in all, 1,057 former officers of the Polish army had been arrested, unquote, bringing the total now to 54,232. The 25,000 soldiers and non-commissioned officers were assigned to forced labor. But for the rest, from October 1939 to February 1940, the Poles held in these camps were subjected to lengthy interrogations and constant political agitation by NKVD officers. The interviews were in effect, not openly, but in effect a selection process that would determine who would live and who would die. On 5th March 1940, pursuant to a note to Joseph Stalin from Beria, six members of the Soviet Politburo, Stalin himself, Molotov, Kaganovich, Voroshilov, Mikoyan, and Kalinin, signed an order to execute 25,700 Polish, quote, nationalists and counter-revolutionaries, unquote, which is what they call them, kept at camps and prisons in occupied Ukraine and Belarus. According to Soviet documents declassified in 1990, 21,857 Polish internees and prisoners were executed after 3rd April 1940. In early 1943, Rudolf von Gersdorf, a German officer serving as the intelligence liaison between the Wehrmacht's Army Group Center and Abwehr, received reports about mass graves of Polish military officers. These reports stated the graves were in the forest of Goat Hill near Katyn. After extensive preparation, on 13th April, Berlin radio broadcast to the world that German military forces in the Katyn forest near Smolensk had uncovered a ditch that was, quote, 28 meters long and 16 meters wide, very large, that's 92 feet by 52 feet, in which the bodies of 3,000 Polish officers were piled up in 12 layers, unquote. Louis Fitzgibbon, who has written extensively about Katyn, wrote about a secret Soviet report that had been uncovered, and he said this about it. This secret Soviet report is probably one of the most significant documents in recent history, and it should be reprinted a million times over. Copies should be sent to every international jurist and every responsible politician. It stands as a terrible indictment of a most horrendous crime committed in peacetime against defenseless prisoners of war as a gross act of genocide and one of the darkest chapters of recent centuries. It goes like this. It's headed as Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, People's Internal Affairs Commissariat for headquarters of the NKVD region in Minsk. 10th July, 1940. 2. The headquarters of the NKVD Moscow. Official report. By order of the headquarters of the NKVD of February 12, 1940, the liquidation of the three Polish prisoners of war camps was carried out in the regions of the towns of Kozielsk, Ostashkovo, and Starobielsk. The operation of liquidating the above three named camps was completed on June 6th of that year. Comrade Burjanov, who had been seconded from the central office, was appointed to be in charge. Under the above-mentioned order, the camp at Kozielsk was liquidated first of all by the security forces of the Minsk headquarters of the NKVD in the area of the city of Smolensk, during the period between 1st March and 3rd May of that year. As security forces, territorial troops, in part from the 190th Rifle Regiment, were employed. The second action under the above order was carried out in the area of the town of Bologoya by the security forces of the Smolensk headquarters of the NKVD and was also covered by troops of the 129th Rifle Regiment, Weliki Luki, in parentheses. It was completed by 5th June of that year. The Kharkov headquarters of the NKVD was entrusted with carrying out the third liquidation of the camp of Starobielsk. It was carried out in the area of the Dergachi settlement with the assistance of security forces of the 68th Ukrainian Rifle Regiment of the Territorial Troops on 2nd June. In this case, the responsibility and leadership in this action was entrusted to the NKVD Colonel B. Kutchov. A copy of this report is being sent simultaneously to the NKVD generals Raikman and Suburin for their attention. And it's signed, the organizational head of the office of the NKVD area of Minsk, Tartakow, T-A-R-T-A-K-O-W. Thus, says Louis Fitzgibbon, if the report is authentic, and what reason is there to suppose it is not, the riddle is solved. 4,254 Polish prisoners were shot at Katyn, 3,841 were shot near Kharkov, and 6,376 were shot near Bologoya, a total of 14,471. and none of them have received an iota of justice, nor has any man paid anything for this most dastardly crime. I will now read Chapter 21, Katyn, by Alfred de Zayas, from the year 1989. Perhaps the only non-German war crime of World War II that has received worldwide attention is the 1940 liquidation of some 14,700 Polish prisoners of war by Soviet authorities. Only the bodies of 4,143 Polish officers were ever counted, and there has been considerable controversy over the authorship of the killings since the German discovery of the mass graves in the spring of 1943 at Katyn Forest near Smolensk in the Soviet Union. Important studies have been published on this subject since the war, many of them by Polish authors. This chapter gives only a brief survey of the facts and the issues involved and shows that subsequent non-German inquiries have largely confirmed the results of the German investigation of 1943. The War Crimes Bureau received its first reports from Soviet prisoners of war who had been interrogated by German officers and judges shortly after the German invasion of the Soviet Union. A communication dated 2 August 1941 refers to the interrogation of a Soviet POW named Merkulov, who, quote, claims to know with absolute certainty that all Polish officers who were taken prisoner by the Soviet Army in the course of the Russian-Polish War of 1939 have been executed, unquote. At first, the Bureau was unable to follow up on this information because no graves had been found, nor was any systematic effort made to find them, even after the Katyn Forest was occupied by the Germans in September 1941. Not until February 1943, when persistent rumors among the Russian population finally alerted the German occupation authorities, did they undertake a search of the area. The ground was still frozen in February, and concerted digging could not start until the beginning of April 1943. Summer heat, however, led to an interruption of the digging in June, barely 2 months later. It was in this relatively short period, from April to June, that the 4,143 bodies were exhumed. Johannes Conrad, a senior judge with the military court of the Center Army Group, went to Katyn to interrogate witnesses. Among these, Russian civilian Parfion Kiseljev stated on 27 February 1943 and confirmed on 18 April 1943 that, quote, in the spring of 1940, for a period of 4 to 5 weeks, 3 to 4 trucks full of men arrived every day in that area of the forest. From my home, I could hear the shooting and the human cries. They were male voices. We supposed that men were being executed. In the whole area, no one really doubted that here Poles had been shot by the NKVD. Unquote. Another Russian, Matvei Sakharov, stated, quote, I worked on the railroad from 1937 to 1941. In the month of March 1940, freight trains arrived from the Tambov district, each train pulling 5 or 6 big cars. As I learned from members of the military escort, the prisoners came from Kozelsk. In my capacity as a switchman, I had the opportunity to remain in the immediate area and to observe the people taken out of the cars. Most of the prisoners wore Polish uniforms and were officers. Among the civilians, I was able to distinguish several priests. The unloading of prisoners continued for 28 days. I determined this on the basis of my official records. Aware of the considerable propaganda value of their discovery, the Germans called upon one of their foremost experts in forensic medicine, Gerhard Butz, director of the Department of Forensic Medicine at the University of Breslau, to supervise the exhumation and to examine the bodies. A commission of German experts in forensic medicine was quickly dispatched to Katyn and carried out numerous autopsies. The Butz report notes, The absence of insect damage on the corpses indicates that the killings and internment took place in a cold season, devoid of insects. The date of the killings may be set in the period from March to May 1940, as indicated by the evidence recovered on or near the corpses, such as documents, wallets, diaries, and newspapers, unquote. In order to strengthen the credibility of the investigations carried out by Dr. Butz, the Germans invited a number of foreign observers, notably representatives from the International Committee of the Red Cross and the Polish Red Cross, foreign journalists from Sweden and Switzerland and other countries, and numerous British and American prisoners of war. In addition to the German doctors, an international medical commission was also established with prominent experts in forensic medicine from neutral countries and from countries under German occupation. They too performed autopsies and conducted other investigations that were duly recorded and promptly publicized. Quote, "Thus far, 7 mass graves have been opened, from which 982 bodies have been taken, examined, and 70% identified. Autopsies were performed on several of the bodies. The exclusive cause of death was invariably found to be a shot in the back of the head. The date of the executions was March and April 1940, as evidenced by the written and printed documents found on the bodies, such as diaries and newspapers, and as reported by witnesses of the events." Unquote. The next section is headed the Nuremberg Proceedings. The reliability of the German investigations, and in particular of the report of the International Medical Commission, was put to question at the Nuremberg trials. In fact, the indictment itself accused the Germans of committing the crime. In July of 1946, the Soviet prosecutor called Dr. Marko Antonov Markov, lecturer in forensic medicine at the University of Sofia, Bulgaria, as key witness to impeach the results of the International Commission. See, they wanted to impeach the results of the International Commission. That's what the Russians at Nuremberg wanted to do. Dr. Markov, who had been one of the 12 commission members, testified on 1st July 1946, and this is his long testimony. Quote, "At the end of April 1943, I was told that I was to take part as representative of the Bulgarian government in the work of an international medical commission which had to examine the corpses of Polish officers discovered in the Katyn Wood. On Monday morning, April 26, I flew to Berlin. The other members of the commission arrived there too. They were the following, besides myself, Dr. Berkel, chief doctor of the Ministry of Justice and assistant of the Institute of Forensic Medicine and Criminology at Bucharest, Dr. Miloslavic, president of Forensic Medicine and Criminology at Zagreb University, who was representative for Croatia, Professor Palmieri, who is professor for Forensic Medicine and Criminology at Naples, Dr. Orso, professor of Forensic Medicine and Criminology at Budapest, Dr. Subic, professor of pathological anatomy at the University of Bratislava and chief of the State Department for Health of Slovakia, Dr. Hayek, professor of forensic medicine and criminology at Prague, who represented the so-called Protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia, Professor Naville, professor of forensic medicine at the University of Geneva, representative for Switzerland, Dr. Speliers, professor of ophthalmology at Ghent University, who represented Belgium, Dr. de Berlet, professor of anatomy at the University of Groningen, representing Holland, Dr. Tramsen, vice chancellor of the Institute for Forensic Medicine at Copenhagen University, representing Denmark, Dr. Saxon, who was professor of pathological anatomy at Helsinki University, Finland. The commission arrived in Smolensk on 28th April in the evening. We stayed in Smolensk 2 days only, 29th and 30th April, 1943. No new graves were opened in our presence. We were shown only several graves which had already been opened before we arrived. Near those opened graves were exhumed corpses already laid out. The only part of our activity that could be characterized as a scientific medico-legal examination were the autopsies carried out by certain members of the commission who were themselves medico-legal experts, but only 7 or 8 of us could lay claim to that qualification. And as far as I recall, only 8 corpses were open. Each of us operated on 1 corpse, except Professor Hayek, who dissected 2. Our further activity during those days consisted of a hasty inspection under the guidance of Germans. As to the condition of the corpses in the Katyn graves, I can only judge according to the state of the corpse that I myself dissected. The condition of this corpse was, as far as I could ascertain, the same as that of all the other corpses. In the head of the corpse I dissected, there was a small hole, a bullet wound in the back of the head. I dictated a report on the spot on the result of my investigation. A similar report was dictated by the other members of the commission who examined corpses. This report was published by the Germans under number 827 in their book, unquote. So that was what Professor Markov testified to for the Soviet prosecution at Nuremberg. Continuing, Soviet prosecutor L.N. Smirnov then asked Dr. Markov whether, in his opinion, the corpses could have been buried 3 years earlier, in 1940, before the German attack on the Soviet Union, or whether they must have been buried subsequent to that, after the Katyn area had been occupied by the German army. And you can understand what he's trying to get at here. Markov answered, quote, "In my opinion, these corpses were buried for a shorter period of time than 3 years. I considered that the corpse I dissected had been buried for not more than 1 year or 18 months. The only member of the delegation who gave a definite statement in regard to the time that corpses had been buried was Professor Milosevic from Zagreb, and he said it was 3 years. However, when the German book regarding Katyn was published, I read the result of his impartial statement regarding the corpse on which he had performed the autopsy. I had the impression that the corpse on which he had performed that autopsy did not differ in its stage of decomposition from the other corpses. This led me to think that his statement that the corpses had been in the ground for 3 years did not coincide with the facts of his description." Unquote. Cross-examination by defense counsel, that is, the counsel for the Germans on trial. Cross-examination by defense counsel Otto Stommer, however, seriously impeached the credibility of Markov's testimony. The witness admitted that the commission had met with several Russians from the Katyn area, although he had first stated that its members had had no contact with the local inhabitants. In fact, the commission had interrogated several Russian witnesses who had stated that the Polish officers had arrived almost daily at the railroad station near Katyn in the months of March and April 1940, that they had been taken in trucks to the wood of Katyn and never seen again. Dr. Markov also retracted his statement that he could not read German and admitted that letters and newspapers and identity papers had been found by members of the commission who were dissecting the bodies. Stommer introduced into evidence a German white book on Katyn and cross-examined Dr. Markov on many passages. An explanation for Markov's change of heart may be sought in his personal experience following the liberation of Bulgaria by Soviet troops in the fall of 1944. Markov had been promptly arrested as a German collaborator and brought before a people's tribunal because of his participation in the International Medical Commission. In order to save his life, he revised his conclusions on Katyn, which he claimed to have signed under duress. After this confession and correction of the record, he was acquitted on 23rd February, 1945. By comparison, it is illuminating to refer to the post-World War II testimony of François Naville of the University of Geneva, who in September 1946, when the Nuremberg trial was nearing its end, was attacked by a member of the Swiss Labor Party, Jean Vincent, because of his participation in the International Medical Commission. So, you know, this Jean Vincent is one of the leftists. Albert Picot, vice president and later president of the Council of State, in parentheses, the Geneva Cantonal Government, asked Dr. Naville to explain his participation in the Geneva Grand Council, and Naville responded in a written report dated 24 September 1946. He wrote, quote, "It was on the night of April 22, 1943, that Dr. Steiner, medical advisor to the German Consulate General in Geneva, asked me whether I could and would leave on April 26 to join the committee of experts concerned. May I add in this connection that I have never concealed from anybody my outspoken hostility toward Germany after 1914, caused by their foreign policy, which I always considered dangerous for Switzerland. Therefore, I refused at first and suggested some other Swiss experts in forensic medicine. In the meantime, however, I contacted other persons. They told me that it was not a matter of rendering a service to the Germans, but of responding to the legitimate wish of the Poles, who demanded that an impartial investigation be made, and that it should be established whether anything had been done to produce a nominal roll of the dead officers, to proceed with the identification as far as possible, and to inform the next of kin. Here I must remind you that, contrary to the practice followed by all the other belligerents, the Russians always refused to supply lists of prisoners of war to the International Committee of the Red Cross, and that for a long time no news had been received of the 10,000 officers they had taken prisoner. When Dr. Steiner again invited me, therefore, I decided to accept." Unquote. Professor Naville's report further indicates that he was authorized to take part in the medical commission both by the Swiss military authorities and by the Federal Political Department. He also maintained that there was no pressure from the Gestapo. He says more from Professor Naville, quote, "I can definitely state that we were able to proceed undisturbed with our work as experts. We were always able to discuss all matters freely among ourselves without the Germans being present. As two of us could speak Russian, we were on several occasions able to talk to the peasants and Russian prisoners of war. We also contacted the medical personnel of the Polish Red Cross, who cooperated at the exhumation and were specially detailed to identify the bodies, make nominal rolls, and inform the next of kin. We freely carried out about 10 post-mortem examinations of bodies which had been taken in our presence from the lower layers of the unexplored common graves. Undisturbed, we dictated reports on the post-mortem examinations without any intervention from the German medical personnel. We examined superficially but quite freely about 100 corpses that had been exhumed in our presence. We paid particular attention to the transformation of the fatty substances of the skin and internal organs, to changes in the bones, to the destruction of joint tendons, to changes in atrophies of various parts of the body, and also to all other signs which would testify to the time of death. Examination of the skull of a lieutenant, undertaken specifically by Professor Orsos from Budapest, at which I was present, brought to light a condition that virtually excluded the possibility of death having occurred less than 3 years previously. All the experts met on Friday afternoon to discuss and decide on the composition of the report. Only medical personnel took part in that discussion, but without any interference. Some of us made a draft of the final report, and it was submitted to me for signature on Saturday. I offered several comments and asked for some changes and additions, which were immediately made. I do not know whether the same consideration was given to the observations and criticisms made by Dr. Markov of Bulgaria. I do not remember whether he intervened during our discussion at the meeting, but I was present when he signed the report on May 1st, about noon, and I can state that he did not then make any objections or protests. He was certainly not under any pressure or constraint while the commission, of which he was a member, was at work." Unquote. It is perhaps regrettable that only Dr. Markov was asked to testify at the Nuremberg trial, and that none of the other members of the commission had an opportunity to express their views there. Johannes Conrad, the German military judge in charge of the Katyn investigation, and thus an important witness to the investigations, did give the following written affidavit on 25th June 1946. He wrote, quote, "I personally viewed the exhumation and observed that the corpses had a dried-up, mummified appearance. The uniforms were identifiable. All corpses had a shot in the head. Some were gagged in the mouth. Others had the arms shackled. On most of the bodies, papers, jewelry, and money were found, thus facilitating the task of identification. All items found on the victims were classified and exhibited in a room. The diaries and letters found indicated that the execution of the Polish officers must have occurred in April 1940. As far as I remember, the last entries in the diaries found were dated 7th April. Conrad's affidavit, it seems, was not duly taken into account by the tribunal. Nevertheless, the Soviet prosecution failed to pin the blame on the Germans. The German officer named by the Russians as having been in charge of the massacre, Colonel Friedrich Ahrens, volunteered to testify. When it was proved beyond doubt that he was neither present at the alleged time of the massacre, nor at that time commander of the unit accused, Signal Regiment 537, the Soviets claimed that his predecessor, Colonel Albert Bedenk, was responsible. Once Bedenk was produced by the German defense, the case was dropped. Significantly, the subject of Katyn did not appear in the final verdicts. Well, there's a lot more that can be said about that, but that's all that Desaias says. And now he goes on to the U.S. congressional investigation. Following the Soviet fiasco at Nuremberg, further attempts were made to arrive at the truth, notably by a U.S. House of Representatives Select Committee, which was established in 1951 and issued its final report on 22nd December 1952. The Select Committee interrogated, among others, Colonel Albert Bedenk, the German officer who preceded Colonel Ahrens as commanding officer of the Signal Regiment 537, and Dr. Helga Tramsen, the Danish member of the International Medical Commission, who refuted the report of a Russian medical commission that visited Katyn in January 1944 after the Germans retreated. He explained why the International Commission made only, quote, an extremely small number of post-mortem examinations, unquote, as charged by the Russian Commission. The German experts in forensic medicine under Professor Butz had already carried out a considerable number of post-mortem examinations and about 900 identifications by the time the International Commission arrived. Under the circumstances, it was sufficient to perform full autopsies on 9 bodies selected at random. The Select Committee tested Tramsen on his own credibility, his political persuasion, and his wartime activities during the German occupation of Denmark. As it happened, he had been a member of the Danish resistance for a year before he was called to serve on the Katyn Commission. In parentheses, he had contacted the resistance movement to discuss whether he should participate at all, and was eventually arrested by the Gestapo and held for the last year of the war at a concentration camp, meaning that he was not prejudiced in favor of the Germans in his dealings with investigating the bodies. The Select Committee also interrogated Dr. Ferenc Orsos, the Hungarian member of the International Commission, who had been chosen by the other members to act as chairman. Dr. Orsos reaffirmed his conclusions that the bodies had been buried for about 3 years. Other members who appeared before the Select Committee and confirmed their 1943 findings were Francis Naville of Switzerland, Vincenzo Mario Palmieri of Italy, and Edward Lucas Milosevic of Croatia. Count Joseph Zapski, a Polish officer taken prisoner by the Russian army in September 1939, also testified before the Select Committee. Approximately 15,000 Polish officers and men had been interned at the Soviet camps of Starobielsk, Kozielsk, and Otashkov. Kozapski himself had been held at Starobielsk until 5th April 1940. When the evacuations began, he was segregated from the rest and sent with some others to the camp of Gryazovec, presumably for further interrogation. At the time, he assumed that the other officers had been scattered among the various camps throughout Russia. After Hitler's invasion of Russia in the summer of 1941, a Polish army in Russia was to be organized under the Polish general Władysław Anders to fight the German army. Kozapski was deputized to organize a search for the needed officers. The list of names he prepared was presented to Stalin on 3rd December 1941, but the men could not be found. On 2nd February 1942, Kozapski presented another memorandum to Soviet General Reichman at the Lublyanka, which is the seat of the NKVD, in Moscow. At no time, said Kozapski, did the NKVD suggest that the missing officers could have fallen into the hands of the invading German army. In his capacity as Commissioner for the Affairs of Former Prisoners of War in the USSR, Kozapski continued his research, although he had given up hope that the men would still be alive. None of the families of the missing officers had received letters from them after April of 1940. We were fully aware, Kozapski concluded, that this could have been an act of the Germans, because we knew of the German atrocities. Sure they did. But we knew that in this case it was done by the Russians, because we were in Russia, and we saw how the Russians had been evacuating these prisoners, and we knew that the Russians did not leave any prisoners to fall into the hands of the Germans. Russia is the most centralized country in the world whenever it comes to issuing orders or directives or policy. Therefore, the full responsibility for this crime does not rest with some NKVD sadist. The full responsibility rests with Beria and Stalin. The Congressional Committee also heard the testimony of Władysław Kałęcki, a Polish lieutenant who had been taken prisoner by the Germans in 1939 and subsequently released, and who on behalf of the Polish Red Cross had participated in April 1943 with other Polish officials in an on-site inspection of the graves where they examined some 40 bodies. Kałęcki also spoke with two Russians who worked on a farm near the forest and had seen the NKVD vans, known as the Black Ravens, bringing soldiers into the Katyn Woods in April 1940. In May 1943, Kałęcki returned to Katyn with British, Australian, and American POWs to try to establish a list of the Polish officers found in the graves. His review of all the documents found on the bodies persuaded him that the massacre had been perpetrated by the Russians. Kałęcki also reported to the Congressional Committee that in May 1947 in Italy, he had been approached by an official of the Warsaw government in Poland, Alex Dobrowolski, then adjutant to the Polish military attaché in Rome. Dobrowolski proposed to him that he recant his 1943 conclusion and presented him two copies of a statement already prepared for his signature. He even offered money, approximately $2,000, but Kałęcki refused to recant. That's interesting. The Warsaw government was going along with the Russians, with the Soviets, and cooperating with them. Among the American officers who visited Katyn in 1943, two testified before the Congressional Committee, Lieutenant Colonel Donald B. Stewart and Colonel John H. Van Vliet, had been captured by the Germans in North Africa and had been taken to Germany as POWs. Although both were convinced of the Soviet authorship of the massacre, they refrained from making any statement about it during the war because they did not want to support the German propaganda effort. Only after their liberation did they report to American military intelligence and later to the Congressional Committee. Thus, after thoroughly reviewing the available documentation and questioning witnesses from many nations, the Select Committee concluded its 9-month assignment, and this is what is given from what they wrote. The committee unanimously finds that the Soviet NKVD committed the mass murders of the Polish officers and intellectual leaders in the Katyn Forest. There has not been even any remote circumstantial evidence presented that could indict any other nation in this international crime. It is an established fact that approximately 15,000 Polish prisoners were interned in 3 Soviet camps, Kozielsk, Starobielsk, and Ostashkov, in the winter of 1939-40. With the exception of 400 prisoners, these men have not been heard from since the spring of 1940. Evidence heard by this committee repeatedly points to the certainty that only those prisoners interned at Kozielsk were massacred in the Katyn Forest. On the basis of further evidence, we are equally certain that the rest of the 15,000 Polish officers, those interned at Starobielsk and Ostashkov, were executed in a similar brutal manner. Thus, the committee believes that there are at least 2 other Katyns in Russia. Although the War Crimes Bureau investigated many mass graves discovered in the Soviet Union by the German Army, the Bureau's files shed no light on the fate of the 6,000 Polish prisoners of war thought to have been interned at Ostashkov or the 4,000 at Starobielsk. A newspaper of the Polish government in exile in London, called in English Polish Republic, reported in June 1980 that pipeline construction workers had discovered a mass grave containing the bodies of Polish officers in the vicinity of Orenburg in the southern Urals, but that these are the Starobielsk POWs appears improbable in view of the distance. Other indications place the site of the killings at Dergachi, west of Kharkov, and closer to the camp. It is also improbable that the Russians, as some witnesses suggested, would have transported 6,000 POWs from Ostashkov to the White Sea only to drown them there. If there was an NKVD order to liquidate Polish POWs, it is more likely that the executions took place by simple shooting in the back of the head in the Katyn pattern, perhaps in the general area Bologoya. So the last section is headed Katyn and German Credibility. Desaius writes, since this book endeavors, and this is very interesting sentence here, since this book endeavors to test the credibility of the investigations of the War Crimes Bureau and to look out for evidence of fabrication or doctoring of documents, it appears legitimate to remark, as an ironic aside, that in 1969, the Soviet authorities unveiled a major war memorial at a place called Katyn, a Byelorussian village where the Germans are said to have killed all the inhabitants. And this town is spelled K-H-A-T-Y-N as opposed to the forest place, which is K-A-T-Y-N without the H. Katyn, which is near Minsk, should not be confused with Katyn, which lies some 160 miles farther east near Smolensk, a provincial city in Russia proper. It has been suggested that there was method in this confusion of the issues. The indefatigable Katyn researcher Louis Fitzgibbon has found 1954 and 1956 Soviet maps that show Katyn but not Katyn. A 1969 atlas of the USSR that shows neither, and a 1974 map that shows Katyn but not Katyn. There are many ways of testing the truth of German allegations about Soviet war crimes. External corroboration is an important method. In addition, a close analysis of the German sources, that is, an internal examination into German investigative procedures and how the results of these investigations were internally evaluated, allows a certain judgment with respect to the existence or non-existence of a conspiracy to fabricate evidence. Seldom have historians enjoyed the luxury of being able to study official government papers right across the board, as is the case with captured German records from World War II. Although a number of documents were lost in air bombardments or deliberately destroyed in the last days of the war, the historian can nevertheless compare records from the German Foreign Office, Propaganda Ministry, Chancellery Office, Ministry of the Interior, High Command of the Wehrmacht, the legal offices of the armed forces, and so on. Had the Germans fabricated the Katyn case and, after murdering the Poles, attempted to pin the blame on the Russians, there would surely have been traces of the hoax. Yet a conscientious examination of many record groups in the German Federal Archives revealed again and again that all German officials in the various ministries and departments were convinced that the NKVD had perpetrated the massacres. Even the relatively obscure Publikationsstelle Berlin-Dahlem, a research institution in Berlin specializing in questions concerning the German eastern provinces and Central and Eastern Europe, contains a report dated 29th May 1943 by a medical officer, one Dr. Lang, describing his personal observations at Katyn Forest in May 1943, including the discovery of other nearby graves containing the bodies of civilians. He concluded that the Katyn Forest had been a frequently used execution ground for the NKVD, and estimated that there could be 50,000 bodies in the civilian graves just discovered. In another document, the Russian engineer A. Danilowski, who was appointed by the Germans as mayor of a town in the vicinity of Smolensk, asserted that the Polish prisoners of war who had not been murdered at Katyn had been sent to hard labor on railroad construction in northern Russia, where they would all die of cold, hunger, and exhaustion. He spoke of a large contingent of Polish soldiers, not officers, assigned to the 160-mile railroad line between Sechibiu and Koszwa. It should be further noted that the internal papers of all these ministries and research institutions were not intended for publication and thus reflect the subjective convictions of the officials involved. The very existence of these internal memoranda, reports, and file notes from a variety of officers and as many authors adds authenticity to the German allegations of Soviet responsibility for the Katyn massacre. And that is the end of chapter 21 on Katyn. Zaya said at the beginning of this last section that part of what this book endeavors to do is to test whether the Wehrmacht War Crimes Bureau did a good job or was guilty of fabricating or doctoring the evidence. I suppose that was part of how he got the support in doing this project. It's a pretty big project. And it was supported by a couple of German agencies. And I suppose that all of this was a part of the political correctness that had to be agreed to, that he had to go along with in order to do this. Of course, his judgment is that they did a very good job. He said that throughout, and that there was no fabrication, that they were always trying to find the truth and nothing but the truth. So that shows a huge difference between the German mentality of the National Socialist Government of Adolf Hitler and the Wehrmacht, and that of the Soviets and the Russian mentality of Stalin and his Red Army. Difference of night and day. I'm going to go on next. Next up is chapter 22, Vinnytsia. Vinnytsia is the place where another huge massacre of mostly ethnic Ukrainians by the Soviet Russians took place. A conservative estimate would place the victims' number at 10,000. Most were murdered in the local NKVD prison with a bullet to the back of the neck, and almost all had their hands and feet tied. Young women were found naked, while older women were dressed in something. The excavation started in May 1943 at three different locations: the fruit orchard in the west, the central cemetery, and the People's Park. Most of the bodies were found in the fruit orchard, 5,644 bodies. Altogether, 91 mass graves were discovered at the three different locations, and 9,432 bodies were exhumed. 149 of them were women. An interesting side note is that a monument was also erected to the victims of Stalinist terror. Later, when the Soviets were in control, they rededicated the monument to the victims of Nazi terror, and finally completely removed it and created an entertainment park in its place. Recently, a new monument has been constructed at the burial site in the park. It only refers to victims of totalitarianism. Huh. And so now I'll begin reading from Alfred de Zayas, chapter 22, Vinnytsia. The first mass grave of Ukrainians in Vinnytsia was discovered by the Germans shortly after they occupied the town in 1941. 96 corpses, mostly of Ukrainian political prisoners and religious dissidents, were found in the courtyard of the civilian prison, victims of the general policy of liquidating prisoners when it becomes impossible to evacuate them prior to the arrival of German troops. The grave was about 20 meters long and 6 meters wide. The exhumations took place in the presence of a military judge named Schwartz, who collected the relevant evidence and had photographs taken for the documentation of the War Crimes Bureau. In another courtyard of the same prison, a second mass grave was found, but those bodies were not exhumed. It was not until 2 years later, on 25th May 1943, that as a result of the persistent rumors among the Ukrainian civilian population, digging was begun in other suspected areas of town and more graves discovered. In all, 3 major graveyards were found. The Pear Orchard with 38 mass graves, the Old Cemetery with 40 mass graves, and the People's Park with 35 mass graves. Only some of the bodies were exhumed, weather conditions interrupted the digging, and it was never resumed because the Soviet Army reoccupied the area. By then, however, 9,439 corpses had already been counted. Next section is headed Wartime Investigations. The Bureau did not get directly involved in on-the-spot investigations of the Vinnytsia murders, but merely served as central documentation depot. In view of the political and propagandistic implications of the case, the judicial investigation was entrusted not to a military judge, but to a senior civilian judge appointed by the Minister of Justice upon the request of the Minister for the Occupied Territories. More than 50 witnesses were heard in Vinnytsia itself and in the neighboring towns by a team of judicial investigators under Judge Ziegler. On 29th June 1943, a Ukrainian guard, Yuri Klimenko, explained, quote, "The area I was supposed to watch extended to the courtyard of the church. From there I observed in the fall of 1937 or 1938 that digging was going on in the cemetery every day and trucks arrived every night. Since that appeared suspicious, I went up to the fence and tried to peek through a crack. On several occasions I was able to observe a number of holes in the ground of about 2 square meters, but I could not determine how deep they were. The trucks were transporting immobile objects under a tent cover, which were then thrown into the holes. I could not see exactly what the rigid objects were, since I had to be very careful not to be discovered. I did suspect at the time that the objects were corpses transported from the NKVD prisons. The trucks did not come from the hospital, but rather from the town." Unquote. On 3rd July 1943, another Ukrainian guard, Atanasi Skripka, testified, quote, "I continued to be employed as a guard even after the area of the pear orchard was fenced off. The trucks kept coming and going on a regular basis from 1938 until the arrival of the German troops. Usually 2 or 3 trucks came in at night, and then there was quiet for several nights, and then the trucks returned. Many times I observed traces of blood and frequently smelled the stench of dead bodies. One day I climbed a tree, and from there I saw the open graves with the corpses in them. Apparently the graves were not yet full enough to be closed up. Once I saw two persons who were walking toward the town and who stopped at the fence and tried to see through. Thereupon, they were arrested by some guards and taken away. They have not been heard from since. Unquote. Judge Ziegler summed up in his provisional report dated 18 July 1943. Quote, from 1936 until the outbreak of war, especially in the period from late 1937 to early 1938, many ethnic Ukrainians from Vinnytsia and neighboring villages were arrested and have since disappeared. Thus far, nearly 2,000 bodies have been exhumed. Judging by the number of graves already discovered, but from which the bodies have not yet been exhumed, a conservative estimate would place the number of victims at 10,000. The persons arrested were mostly farmers and laborers and ranged between 40 and 50 years of age. Unquote. Meanwhile, as in Katyn, the Germans had first sent in their own experts in forensic medicine, then invited foreign experts. The International Medical Commission that arrived in Vinnytsia in July of 1943, some 3 months after the Katyn investigations, was composed of 11 doctors from Belgium, Bulgaria, Croatia, Finland, France, Hungary, Italy, the Netherlands, Romania, Slovakia, and Sweden. From 13 to 15 July 1943, they carried out 11 full autopsies and 24 simple post-mortem examinations. The commission's expert opinion, signed on 15 July, reads in part, quote, all the corpses examined had bullet wounds in the back of the head or in the neck. With the exception of the lower neck shots, the cause of death was the head injury. From the information obtained from relatives and eyewitnesses and from the documents found on the corpses as the medical examination of the decomposition of the bodies, as described in the protocol, it may be concluded that the killings took place in the year 1938. Unquote. The Commission's conclusions confirmed the results of the medico-legal investigations already carried out by a team of German and Ukrainian doctors under a Dr. Schrader, director of the German Association for Forensic Medicine and Criminology. Schrader's provisional report of 16 June 1943 described the exhumation of 509 corpses, of which 171 had been subjected to post-mortem examination. The German Minister of Health, Dr. Leonardo Conti, thereupon appointed Dr. Schrader head of a German commission of 13 professors of forensic medicine, which from 27 to 29 July 1943 studied the work already done by Schrader and his assistants, visited the three grave sites, and carried out a number of autopsies. They arrived at the same conclusion as the International Medical Commission. The next section is headed Post-War Investigations. A decade later, as in the Katyn case, a special committee of the United States Congress turned its attention to war crimes reported from Eastern Europe, including the Vinnytsia killings. The House Select Committee on Communist Aggression, again chaired by Charles Kirsten from Wisconsin, held hearings in Munich on 30th June and 1st July, in New York, 11 to 14 October, and in Chicago, 18 to 19 October, 1954. Among the 68 witnesses heard by the committee, 5 testified on the events at Vinnytsia. Zenon Polensky, Pavlo Pavlenko, Ihor Zurlevi, Ivan Rudenko, and Fedir Pihido. Zenon Polensky, a Ukrainian national and a journalist by profession, had been in Vinnytsia at the time of the discovery of the mass graves and the exhumation of the bodies. On 30th June 1954, he testified in Munich. This is a long testimony. Quote, some 1.5 kilometers from the town on the north edge of a highway, there was an orchard, and rumor claimed that in this orchard mass graves had been found. The NKVD had appropriated this orchard from somebody and fenced it, nearly 3 meters high, and there were rumors that behind this fence in the orchard, some dreadful things had happened. Of course, you have to take into account, gentlemen, how it looked during the Bolshevik occupation. People talked about it only in a low whisper, and there was almost superstition about this place. In 1941, the German-Russian War broke out. The Germans occupied the district of Vinnytsia in July 1941. But no one bothered very much about this orchard. It was fenced in still. But in the very cold winter of 1941-1942, the population began to take this fence apart piece by piece and board by board. They used it for firewood. By the spring of 1942, there was no more fence. I believe the first man who convinced the Germans in Vinnytsia in 1943 that it might be of interest to investigate this orchard more closely was Professor Dr. Doroshenko. He was a court physician and got permission from the German town commissar to make the first diggings. At last, after some 2.5 months, they dug up in this orchard 38 graves. I saw them dig up hundreds of corpses from single pits and rebury them, and I saw that repeated for days and days, so the conclusion is reasonable that there must have been thousands of these corpses. The population told the Germans that they suspected also the old cemetery and the so-called People's Recreation Park. Of course, after they had found these terrible places, the Germans tried to make use of them politically and propagandistically, so they invited committees to come and inspect the place. I remember at the beginning of July 1943, an official German committee came, consisting of three groups: specialists in forensic medicine, assisted by the local physicians, the Committee for the Investigation of Murder from the Reichskriminalpolizeiamt Berlin, and the delegation of the German Ministry of Justice. The most important group seemed to be the International Committee of Expert Foreign Forensic Physicians, which visited Vinnytsia in July 1943, and then on 15 July 1943 signed a protocol as a summary of their findings. After the news about these terrible findings spread throughout the region, people started to come to Vinnytsia, for the most part women, mothers, sisters, sweethearts. And you could see in this orchard and in the other places lots of women coming and going. There were not very many identification cards with the people in the graves, and most had to be identified by their garments. A great many of these people were identified. Unquote. End of his testimony. Ihor Zurlevi testified on the same day that his own father had been arrested by the NKVD and was never heard from again. Zurlevi was in Vinnytsia when the International Commission of Forensic Medicine Experts was inspecting the graves. He said, quote, "The members of the commission themselves directed which bodies or corpses were to be taken out of the graves, and they personally conducted an inspection of the bodies. The examination was generally conducted in the following manner. The head was cut open, I am describing what I saw with my own eyes, and the bullets taken out. Then various other types of examinations were performed. Also, the members of the commission interrogated Ukrainian wives who had recognized bodies of husbands." Unquote. In its final report, the Congressional Committee concluded that the NKVD had carried out a policy of systematic terror in the Ukraine, claiming thousands upon thousands of lives, including the 9,439 counted Vinnytsia victims. Years later, in 1971, the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee published yet another investigation of NKVD killings, including Katyn and Vinnytsia. Other non-German sources of the post-war period have likewise confirmed the German allegations as documented by the War Crimes Bureau. The Ukrainian Exile Press has published many studies of NKVD massacres. The documentary collection, titled Russian Colonialism in the Ukraine, includes the Vinnytsia massacre and a statement by Ukrainian witness Ihor Zurlevi. And that, ladies and gentlemen, concludes the chapter on Vinnytsia and concludes my reading for this installment number 12. In conclusion, I'd like to say that it is clear that in Eastern Europe, the mass of the killing was done by the Soviets, not by the Germans, as has been falsely promoted by the Allied powers. From Riga in the Baltic states down through Poland and throughout the vast territory of Ukraine, Stalin's NKVD secret police carried out hundreds of organized murders of up to 10,000 and even more at a time and buried their bodies in hidden mass graves. This also went on in the Soviet Union proper, so who knows the numbers of enemies of the state who lie in thousands of forever silent mass graves. These are the work of Stalin and his henchmen, henchmen with whom we must include the American and British highest level political and military leaders. They needed to cover for their own monstrous crimes and still continue to do so today. The one group the Soviets did not murder were the Jews. They murdered ethnic Ukrainians and Poles, and of course Germans and Latvians, etc., but they protected the Jews and moved millions of them into the more eastern parts of Russia, from whence they later moved west again after the war. It is a tale that has yet to be told without censorship. Next time I will be reading chapter 23, Shipwrecked Survivors. And until then, be well. This is Carolyn Yeager on the Wehrmacht War Crimes Bureau series. Bye for now. Until next time.